So everything's cool.
What do you drink in the morning?
Water. Smoothie sometimes.
Smoothie. No, really. No, like orange juice or apple juice or anything to get started for the day.
Sometimes if I'm traveling, I'll have an apple juice or orange juice. Rarely at home.
Really?
Yeah.
I just don't know what my life would be like if I didn't drink coffee in the morning. Like, I can't picture it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have thoughts of what mine would be like if I did.
Probably be bouncing off the walls. You might actually be productive.
Wow.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with host Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to episode 578 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm Stephen Seagraves, joined today by Mr. Seth Miller.
Howdy.
How you doing, sir? The slummiest landlord of this side of the Mississippi.
Listen, okay, there's a few Seth Millers in this world, and just because the mayor of New York City is using my name to attack people doesn't mean it's necessarily me.
He's taking your name in vain.
Yeah, on the plus side, A, I knew there was a terrible landlord named Seth Miller because I get emails of people trying to sell him stuff all the time. And two, it has had people coming out of the woodwork to say hello again who I haven't talked to in a long time. So that's been fun.
That's funny. Do you ever like reply to the emails of people selling him things?
Frequently telling them that I'm not a slumlord and whoever they bought their email list from robbed them and they should get their money back.
Oh, man. Good times.
The good news is usually they stop emailing me.
No, that's nice. It just doesn't keep going. I mean, that means someone's monitoring it. That's good.
Yeah. So,
yeah. All right. We got a bunch of news. Cathay has said that they're expecting the 777X in 2027.
And that they expect to get 7 of them, I believe.
Right off the bat.
Well, in the first year.
Okay.
Yeah, which in a lot of ways makes sense, right? If the certification happens, like Boeing has been sort of slow roll building, but has been building them and fitting them and getting them ready to go. So
yeah,
on the off chance that they do it or when they get certified, let's have some optimism here. When they get certified, the deliveries will start to happen pretty quickly. But
who's supposed to be the launch customer? Is it supposed to be Emirates or is it going to be Lufthansa?
Yeah, sure.
One of those two.
They had been, I think, if I remember correctly, it was originally Emirates and then became Lufthansa. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Because Emirates was like, whatever, guys, you can't sort your stuff out. Let us know when you're actually ready and we'll then start planning around it. Yeah, and I don't know that either of them. I vaguely recall Emirates also saying that they thought 27 was feasible still. So,
yeah,
you know,
we'll see.
Just, yeah, it's, I guess, a vague bit of optimism.
The thing that's interesting about Cathay is they've struggled post-COVID to grow.
And to sort of figure out where they fit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like, though, relatively speaking, they've stabilized in their, you know, figuring out who they're going to be and when they grow up and whatnot and what role they're going to fill. I think it's less U.S. service.
Yeah.
Less North America, but they have stabilized a bit and are, you know, financially doing better than they were a year or two ago. So
yeah. I mean the 777X is a lot of plane for an airline that has all gotten rid of a lot of 777Ws.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. Maybe they only end up taking 7 or,
you know. Well, I mean, that's just the number for the first year. I think their planning is the full order. But
yeah, I mean, and that's kind of where I'm going, is like, that's a lot of planes if you're gonna keep taking 777Xs. And I mean, I get it. You probably need the capacity to places like London and Sydney and things like that, but it's just a lot of playing.
Yeah.
So, Indigo, the CEO has called it quits.
Oh, no. The CEO is no longer there. Whether he quit or not is, yeah, this is Peter Elbers. Was he KLM CEO? Is that right?
So. Yeah, I think so.
Moved there a couple of years ago, was going to sort of modernize and westernize and professionalize and make Indigo, you know, the leading airline outside India, not just the leading airline within India. And honestly, things were kind of going okay. They had started growing. They got their wide body order. They were still growing domestically. They had the wet leases from Norse that they'd started running some of their service into Europe, and then there was that whole staffing meltdown late last year because they for did not appropriately plan for new rules about pilot crew rest requirements.
Yeah.
And that was very, very bad. And now he's gone.
Do you, I mean, is your take that he's pushed out?
Yes. 100%. Yeah.
Do we know anyone who's coming in? Have they assigned an interim CEO?
That's a good question. If they did, I didn't see it. Here we go. Managing Director Rahul Bhatia will assume the interim steps.
Okay. Indigo was actually kind of growing under Elbers.
Yeah, Indigo's been growing sort of nonstop. They've been a meteoric rise.
Yeah. Because they started buying 787s, right? From Norse?
So the Norse is a wet lease. I think what they bought, the announced order, if I remember correctly, was Airbus.
But, oh, yeah, they have A350-900s, yeah. Yep. 60 of them.
Yeah, right. And they currently have 400 planes flying 2,200 daily flights.
Yeah.
In and around India. So, and by around, definitely plenty of international service. But, and Bhatia, the guy coming back, is one of the original founders. So, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, leading him then into the staffing meltdown, not a great look.
No.
I wonder if they've had some issues with just overall performance lately, with everything going on in the world, but it's hard to tell.
Yeah, I don't think, what I would say is they certainly have some exposure with Middle Eastern routes.
Yeah.
Not a ton. They were partners with everybody who was coming into India and handling moving people around within India for them rather than connecting them from other places into India, if that makes sense.
Yep.
They had some routes onward, but because of bilaterals and things like that, they didn't necessarily have route authorities to fly to a lot of the other countries that are affected. But, you know, everybody who moves people between India and the Middle East is impacted right now.
Yep.
Which, by the way, spot prices for jet fuel. Yikes.
What are we at now?
Depends on where in the world you are, but close to 200 in some places for barrel. Not good. Sorry, hang on. I actually have some charts here that are exciting. The Airlines for America jet fuel spot prices over the past 60 days. Price on Friday, March 13th was $3.99 a gallon. Which is their average for Chicago, Houston, Los Angeles, and New York. That's up from $2.50 on February 27th.
Wow.
Yeah. IATA shows a similar spike, but doesn't have the weekend. Their stuff is a week behind still, but.
That's a 50% increase in price, basically.
60%, but yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet, right?
That's great.
Good luck buying a summer trip this year. I've given up.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that. Have you seen fares rise significantly since this started?
I haven't. Hard to say. Because I don't look at fares regularly. When I need to go somewhere, I figure out what it costs and I do it. But I haven't had anything really that I've been thinking about planning to do. But from what I can tell, there's zero indication that there's any reasonable recovery in the fuel prices. I think one of the interesting things, and maybe you mentioned this when we were talking about it last week or before or something, but unless things start moving relatively soon, you start running into problems of there's nowhere to put stuff anymore.
Yeah.
There's one coming to George.
Yeah.
And the refineries and at the, you know, ports and the warehousing and whatnot, it becomes a problem.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to stop pumping oil out of the ground.
Yeah. Ideally you slow down rather than stop, because stopping and starting is way harder than slowing and speeding.
Yes.
So this is stopping is very risky.
It's stopping is, weeks long efforts if you need to restart. So, I mean, it's probably shorter than that now, but that's what it was when I was doing that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I worry that, like, and I think why people should be concerned is that this affects not just Americans. Like, this isn't just an American problem. Like, this is going to impact everybody, because at some level people get their oil from the Middle East, whether that's because they buy the raw good or because they buy the finished product at some point.
Yeah.
So having it cut off and having delays, and you're talking about lags of weeks, like, there's things, you know, we talked about COVID when it was like cutting off supply chain type stuff or logistics issues. Like, those were weeks of logistics issues, and then you finally caught up. Or when the ship got caught in the Suez Canal, how long did it take to recover from that? Like,
yeah. Speaking of, the Houthis say that they're going to close the strait at the south end of the Red Sea, so the Suez might become harder to transit also. Anyway, where were we?
So let's talk about Delta and Manila.
Yes. This was interesting. So we talked last week about Philippine Airlines applying to serve O'Hare.
Yep.
Or the week before we talked about it. And it was sort of a throwaway mention. But getting access to operate at Manila has been a pain in the ass for U.S. Airlines for many, many years now. And you may recall United wanted it and was fighting for several years, pushing to get their access, and eventually finally got what they wanted and stopped objecting to Philippine Airlines being able to fly to the United States. And that's when the Philippine Airlines started adding nonstops to the United States, and United got its double daily from San Francisco, and everybody was happy. That is basically happening again, but this time it's Delta who wants to operate starting from summer 2027 with an A330neo.
Do you think they're using the Philippine Airlines Chicago service as leverage?
They are. They have filed a brief in the Route Authority docket with the United States Department of Transportation saying, we don't oppose this, but we want to make sure that we have equal access to the market that they do. And so you shouldn't rule on their request until they've ruled on our request to have access, which is basically echoes what United did, you know, a decade ago.
Yeah. And I mean, they're talking about summer 2027. That's probably because that's the only obtainable time for the flight. Like, they know they're not going to get it by this summer.
And they, I mean, do they have the aircraft ready and all those other things, right? They're still waiting on planes to arrive. They're still taking, Delta's still taking new planes too.
Yeah.
So
it's an interesting one. They want to do it on a 330 Neo
900. Yeah.
900. And it's a long route. I'm surprised that Delta's pushing LA more now.
I mean, as opposed to Seattle, your favorite?
Yeah, I mean, we all know my thoughts on Seattle. But I think LA, I mean, it's interesting because didn't United post that? They posted that infographic about hubs and locations around the United States where they're the dominant carrier. And, you know, 10, 12 years ago, they weren't the dominant carrier in a lot of these markets. And now they are: Houston, Chicago, the Bay Area. But LA, Delta's still number one or number two, one of the two.
And Delta or LA is very much a market where one holds a plurality, not a majority of the operations, right? Like,
yep.
Delta operates, whatever, 80% of the seats out of Atlanta. American operates 90% of the seats out of DFW or Charlotte. And I think LA, it's like 26%, 25%, 28%, something like that is probably the biggest anyone gets. I haven't actually run the numbers lately. I can try and pull them up. But, like, no one is doing huge numbers in LAX. And it's maybe it's a good thing. I actually think it's a good thing, right?
That's what I wanted to go down this road because I feel like I've had some discussions with friends and stuff. And they're like, well, the super hubs. And I'm like, I think the super hubs are actually a problem. Like, I think, one, from an operation standpoint, anything goes wrong, it entirely screws up that airline for a day or a week or whatever. But two, you've consolidated all of this control over an airport where people are basically forced to fly the airline if they're based there, if that's their home base.
Yeah.
I feel like LA, you have a lot of options to fly other airlines.
Yeah, Delta, for the current month, March 2026, Delta's operating 9,100 flights and 1.4 million seats out of 42,000 and 7.3 million. So 25, just under 25% of the seats, 22% of the seats, or excuse me, flights and or to a maybe 20% of the seats. So yeah, and that's the, and they're the biggest ones. So it really is a market where United is right behind them at 8,100, American is 7,800, Southwest 4,300, Alaska 3,200, Frontier and JetBlue at 1,000 each.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe JetBlue has that many flights there since it's just the transcons. But anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there's a lot of competition. I think it is good for passengers because fares stay lower. There's opportunities. Arguably, it's more expensive for the airlines to operate there.
Mm-hmm.
Which why, right? They like super hubs because it's, you get economy of scale and control. But as a consumer, you're stuck with these guys' control.
But what's the balance though? Like we don't want to go back necessarily to regulated airlines, but
why not?
Well, then the government controls the price. The government controls the price, and I don't know that I love that.
Yes. Is your question there, like, should we have a cap on how much any one airline can control at an airport?
Yeah, potentially, or something of that nature. But then I look at Europe, and it's the same thing there. Like, but that, a lot of that's country-based. It's not even necessarily carrier-based. KLM is the Dutch airline. That's why that Amsterdam is their hub.
Yeah.
And same with Frankfurt, and you could say Munich or whatever. Yeah,
I mean, right, like Munich is definitely, you know, all Lufthansa all the time, but it's not, you know, I'm looking it up here. They are, Lufthansa is 50% of the flights and 50% of the seats at Munich, but it's, you know, only 50%.
Yeah, compared to 80.
Compared to 80, it's for a super hub. There's KLM, that is KLM that much of Amsterdam? 21,000 flights out of 37,000. So even still not 80%.
Yeah. So it's a conundrum, I feel like. I feel like going down the super hub route. I mean, I just looked at DFW the other day. They had a thunderstorm roll through there, and I was supposed to be flying through there, and they basically delayed everything by 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So if you're connecting, good luck, Chuck.
Are you still?
Yeah, exactly. You're spending the night. Like, I called her. I was like, I just need to cancel this. And she's like, oh, well, we can get you on a flight tomorrow. I'm like, that doesn't help me. Like, I don't want to spend the night in Dallas. Sorry. So, anyway, back to LAX. I think it's interesting that Delta's, I mean, it makes sense from the perspective that they want to keep up their, you know, service there. And this is another market where they don't have a partner that can fly it. So I get why they want to put their medal on it. It's just interesting to see what they choose to put at Seattle and what they choose to put at LAX.
Yeah. Well, and Seattle is kind of full.
Yeah. Yeah. Asked them about yesterday. YTZ, Billy Bishop.
Billy Bishop. Two real interesting things happening there. Preclearance, U.S. preclearance opened, even though ostensibly the government of DHS is shut down right now. Opened the new pre-clearance facility at Billy Bishop. So that enables access for a lot more U.S. airports to be served from there more easily. Notably LaGuardia and DCA, but others as well.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. I mean, do you think they start some cool little like routes to places that don't necessarily have immigration?
Well, Air Canada's starting with LaGuardia end of the month in a couple weeks here. Porter is moving its midway service to O'Hare, which will align with American Airlines for connections, which they have their weird little partnership going on now, and some other things. Air Canada is adding a few other airports as well. I forget how it plays out through the rest of the year, but they're going to move some stuff around there. You know, the real question is, what does transborder business traffic look like? And right now, that is still a very strained market.
Yeah.
But presumably at some point that will get sorted and there'll be a rebound. The question is, how long will it take and how long will the airlines then take to react after that and sort of backfill?
Yeah. What's the other interesting thing that happened?
The provincial government of Ontario seems to be taking over the airport from the city. And Doug Ford, who's the premier, wants to extend the runway and start flying jets there, which basically the only plane that can fly in and out right now is the Q400 based on noise profiles and what's permitted and, you know, capacity and all those things. So there was a local vote resolution, whatever, a couple years ago, I assume now. I remember it happening, but can't tell you exactly when, where they said, hey, we should let jets fly here. They're super quiet. The Newlands are quiet. You won't know the difference. And the locals voted no. And Ford thinks it's going to be good for business. And so he wants to boost capacity there. And I think my favorite comment I saw about this, and I'm a little bummed Foss isn't here because I would love to hear his LaGuardia rant again. Maybe give it a go, is that we were taking this airport we love and making it better by turning it into the airport we hate.
I mean, they hate it because of noise. They don't hate it because it's going to have more people at it. That's the thing.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, this is my point about Foss and LaGuardia. Like, he hates it because it got bigger and cleaned up, but it's not convenient anymore. And so if you take Billy Bishop and make it bigger and have, you know, more capacity and bigger terminal and all these other things, do you lose it, you know, but it's no longer super quick and easy to get through and get over, you know, across the tunnel or the little ferry and whatever. Like, do you lose that convenience? Also, at this point, does adding a few more regional flights or regional jets services rather than the props really do great things for Toronto's business market?
I mean, I think the hard thing to predict is, like, again, when does the U.S. market come back?
Yeah.
Because I feel like being able to do something like, because I'm guessing it's a 220 that you'd probably put in there, right? Because of
or an E90.
Or an E190, yeah.
The E2 family, excuse me, not the E1s.
Yes. Which you could do, like, the west coast of the United States into Billy Bishop.
That would depend on runway length for max loading.
Yeah, true. But I think the airlines would take it. If the market proved strong enough, I think they would take that hit just to make it work. Like, they would fly out with empty seats if they needed to. I don't know. I get what you're saying about convenience over, you know,
yeah,
here we have this cute little airport. But
the other stat I'll throw at you, and this will probably change with preference a little bit, but this month they are out of Billy Bishop, and this is round trip service, so, you know, cut them numbers in half, I guess, but 2,300 flights to Canada and 650 flights to the United States. So domestic is still
the,
you know, 75% of the market.
Yeah.
And so I keep saying the business transborder stuff, but that matters more for pre-clearance. But if maybe there really is that sort of domestic business model, or it's leisure traffic. I mean, Porter does a decent job grabbing both.
Yeah.
And Air Canada does fly its business triangle, right? They have their Ottawa, Montreal, Billy Bishop service already. So,
I mean, I think about this as, like, this is an even more convenient London City.
Yes.
Like, London City is convenient, but it's not convenient to, like, central London. It's convenient to East London and Bankia.
Yeah.
This is convenient to central Toronto, like downtown central Toronto.
Yeah.
So I could see from a domestic perspective, even putting E2s on this service within Canada to grab some more of that traffic. I didn't realize that there's actually people who live on the island. And I'm guessing that's actually who opposes it more than people in downtown.
I was led to believe it was the people a lot. It was also the people who own the, like, condos on the waterfront. Really? In downtown. Yeah. But yeah, it's currently the runway is only 4,000 feet. That's mighty short.
Yeah, true. But you could do decent amount of stuff out of there with a jet, even partially loaded, I think.
I don't know, man. Where else is there a 4,000 foot runway that we could compare?
I don't know of anyone that's short.
Yeah, let's see. Because London City's like 6,000 feet, I think.
Yeah, and that with the super steep approach, even. So anyway.
No, it's 5,000. It's 5,000 feet.
Is it 4,900
feet?
Okay, I'm looking at old data, I guess.
I'm talking about London City. It's 4,900 okay. feet. So it's 100. That's 1,000 more feet than Billy Bishop. But yeah, it's limited to the 220, the E195 E2s, and the 318 if you have them. And you don't need the steep approach. So I don't know. You could do some cool things. Anyway, it's interesting. I like it.
The E2 can run on a 1,200 meter runway, so it would fit.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
I think there's some opportunity there. Like they could do probably Winnipeg or Calgary.
Yeah. I mean,
you know,
a lot of options if given it'll run there.
That's yeah. International service even they could do.
Transborder.
Yeah. Well, but on top of that, Air Canada has also announced that they're starting more landline service. Did you see this?
Yeah, they got like three more airports. Is it Niagara and
Sarnia, and there was one other, Muskoka?
Sure. I'm glad you said that, not me.
Oh, Kingston, which I think is one they already had, right?
Yeah. I mean, the full seven from this summer will be Hamilton, Kingston, Kitchener-Waterloo, Muskoka, Niagara, and Sarnia.
Yeah.
Niagara is interesting. Thing it's gonna be at the airport, maybe? I mean, at the hotel.
Really?
Ah, sorry. In Niagara Falls, landline services will continue beyond Niagara District Airport with pickup and drop off from the Niagara Falls Marriott on the Falls, located adjacent to the Falls. You could actually book a ticket on Air Canada straight to Niagara Falls.
That's fascinating.
I like that a lot.
And so this is gonna be bus service and do we know how, it sounds like it's not going to be secure or some of them will be secure. Like the Niagara one can't be, right?
Via the air, it still will go via the airports and there is an airport there so they can.
Okay.
The walking so go, hotel part one. This is actually really nice though. If you live in one of those neighborhoods or those towns, Niagara, Sarnia, or Muskoka, the three new ones, they will let you just add and you have a flight tour from Pearson. You can just call in by April 30th and they'll tack on a bus segment for you for free.
Get people interested. That's nice.
Yeah. I think that's really smart.
That is really smart. I think it's cool. I mean, Sarnia, for those who don't know, Sarnia is, there's a big refining facility in Sarnia. It's a former Dow Chemical, or it still is a Dow Chemical location. So there was, at a time, a long time ago, there were a ton of people who would fly into either Toronto or Detroit. And if you flew into Detroit, you had to cross the border and it was kind of a pain.
Yeah.
But a lot of people preferred Toronto because they could clear the border at the airport and everything. So that's a big deal because
yeah.
being able to take the bus and not having to go cross the border yourself is really nice.
Interesting. The Sarnia one, that bus will operate via the Kitchener-Waterloo line. So basically two of the 12 daily round trips will go via that airport and then hop to the next one.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're not selling the Sarnia to Kitchener segment as standalone traffic.
I mean, we can check.
It's still Fifth Freedom? No. Local travel right service rights on a bus.
On a bus. Yeah, super, super cool. I mean,
I will say what's most impressive to me about this is, like, American Airlines is doing its thing with these out of Philly. United sort of was doing it and scaled back, but Air Canada seems to be very successful for them. Obviously, they don't have any data on like numbers and dollars, but they really are growing and it really is expanding to a significant network.
I mean, I think maybe it's one of the complaints for them is like, look, I live in, you know, Mississauga or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't, for me to get to the airport, it takes however long.
Mississauga is. You would be the wrong answer there. That's
yeah. Sorry. I'm guessing people from yeah. Sarnia or, you know, I don't want to sit in the traffic.
Right. I think I don't want to do the driving in the traffic. Right. And this is like, we talked about this a little bit also when we were talking about like Cardiff getting its transatlantic flight, and could, you know, some of these other random routes get the Bristol transatlantic, and I think was it Birmingham we talked about, they were trying to subsidize someone. And you know, there are all these airports that like ultimately people just drive down to London for, or up to Manchester, because it's a couple hours and it's annoying, but that's where the service is and that's where the flight options are. And this is a couple hours, but someone else is doing the driving for you.
Yeah, exactly. If you can get off and I mean, it's kind of like you, right? If you get, if you had a Delta service on a bus to near your home,
to Portsmouth, where the, or to, yeah, where the bus, where the Pease Airport and the bus station is at the end of the effing runway.
Yeah.
I would kill for that to just be able to clear here and be in
Doug.
Austin.
Exactly. Yeah.
I do, I'm taking the bus anyways. I'm paying the $30 anyways. Let me clear security here.
Yeah. It would change, it would change your experience
significantly for the better.
Yep. Gaul A330s. What's going on?
So we talked about these a little last week with the 339s and whatever, and we were guessing at routes that they were going to serve. It turns out we need not have guessed because they have announced some of them. Rio to JFK is coming this summer, 3-8 times a week in July, and then Rio to Orlando will be added after that. Their U.S. service today is on the MAX 8s, and that comes from Recife and Brasilia up in the further north.
Yep.
It's Brasilia. But yeah, it comes on 737 MAXs from further north, and so this lets them get into the bigger, more competitive markets. But don't worry, they're still a low-cost carrier.
I mean, serving Orlando, I mean, I guess everybody wants to go to Disney. I don't...
Yeah, that actually is a massive market for Brazil.
Yeah.
It's not that surprising that they're focused on Orlando rather than Miami or Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
That's pure holiday traffic, and there's a lot of demand there.
It's crazy. And then Global Entry is back. Can hit this Global Entry. Yeah.
It's reopened. They closed it down for a while again with the government, the DHS shutdown, the partial government shutdown, but we've reopened it because it turns out that That stick didn't work. But there are some terrible security lines because it's spring break and there have been more call outs by TSA folks who are, you know, still not getting paid. But because it's only a partial government shutdown, it's not getting quite the same media play as it was when it was a full government shutdown. So
I think it's getting the play. It's just not getting the play by the audiences or by the media outlets that care.
And there's other, shall we say, geopolitical and global news that might be dominating.
Yes, exactly. Cool. Well, we're going to talk about some Aegean news. We're going to talk about some fairly big Southwest news. What's that?
A lot of Southwest
news, some Austin news, and some London Heathrow news for our Patreon supporters. So thank you for listening. If you're not a Patreon supporter, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. You can become
speaking
one.
Of,
oh, we have two. Robert
yeah.
G and Gollum M. Thank you. If I didn't say your name correctly, I apologize. But thank you for supporting the show. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy travels.
Take care.